This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This summer, millions of kids will ride the Hogwarts Express. The new Harry Potter book is due out in a couple of weeks. But despite all the Harry hoopla, there are other books out there for kids, some written for children too young for Harry, others in hopes that kids will need more than one book to keep their minds active this summer. This hour, we'll create Talk of the Nation's Children's Summer Reading List with the help of a couple of children's literature experts and you. So what new stories do you want to share with other kids and parents? What book has your kids getting ready for bed just so they can read the next page or the next chapter? And what picture book has them turning the pages again and again? And as long as we're asking for reviews, are there any books out there you think we should avoid? We especially want to hear from you if you're a kid. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And we also have an email challenge for you today. If you were to create a list of books that every child should know, what books or authors would you pick? Send us a nominee or two for our Kids Lit Classic list, and we'll have the results at the end of the program. Our email address is totn@npr.org. That's totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Eden Lipson. She's the children's book editor of the New York Times and the author of the New York Times Parent's Guide to the Best Books for Children. She's with us from our bureau in New York. And Eden, always good to have you on the program.
Oh, it's nice to be back, Neil.
Also with us is Carol Erdahl. She's the co-owner of the Red Balloon Bookshop, a children's bookstore in St. Paul, Minnesota. She's with us from member station KNOW in St. Paul, and good to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Eden, let's begin with the unavoidable. Harry Potter is not just going to be the kids' book of the year. It's going to be the book of the year.
Probably. And once again, we're being given this amazing, glorious chance to decide for ourselves. There are no advance copies. Nobody has the beat. No one can tell you what to think about it. You get to choose for yourself 2 weeks from now.
What does he think he is, Hillary Clinton?
Well, it's an interesting construct. I mean, Hillary Clinton's story we knew, at least in broad outline. We're filling in the details. In a way, it's sad that most of the children now have an idea based on the movie of what Harry Potter looked like, at least when the voyage began. Mm-hmm. But we are going into the unknown, and we're going in, children and adults, hand in hand. Remember, the children that began with the first book are now, like Harry, working their way into adolescence. And for them, it will be some sort of a parallel voyage. For the adult fans, it will be entertainment. But there's a whole new generation of children who have learned how to read, who've seen the movies, probably, but may not be ready for an adolescent adventure. And I think it's important that while you and your kids and teenagers and adults will enjoy it, that no one feel that they have to read this because it is humongous.
They do get longer and longer. Carol Erdahl, from the bookseller's point of view, this has got to be the most important book of the year for you.
Oh, it certainly is. I tell you, we have already, people have books on hold that they can get that day. And it's we have hundreds who have already put their money on the line and many more who are calling. So I think it's bigger than we would have thought for a third book. I think there hasn't been a huge amount of hype, but certainly adults, as Eden mentioned, are waiting for this book. And we have 15 and 16-year-olds coming in and putting their money down. They're eager for it.
I wonder, the earlier books are still selling, I assume.
Oh, yes, they're selling very well.
The last number I saw go by was, are you ready? 86 million copies in this country.
Wow.
In this country.
And it's been translated into, I'm assuming, Klingon by this time.
Exactly. Easily.
Oh, wow. So this is going to be an important couple of weeks for you, Carol. I wonder, as you watch kids and parents go through your bookstore, is there any tension between, you know, what the parents are aimed towards and what the kids, for their kids, and what the kids want to go for?
Oh, I don't think so. I think Harry Potter has introduced a whole generation of children to fantasy and fantasy books have been very popular. And I think that has revived some other books that we would put in the fantasy genre, and parents remember them themselves. I think of some of the more simple ones, the Edward Eger books, those that were done earlier by Langell, those kinds of books have taken on a new life as well.
Madeline Langell's books, yes, they're wonderful.
Yeah. And I think parents remember how much they enjoyed them, and so they take to Harry Potter as well. We've had some parents, of course, who object to some of the magic and the supernatural, but that has not been very difficult in our store, at least. We have not had a great deal of that kind of criticism.
There's also been the parallel performance of another British fantasy writer whose aim is far more literary and who also has a powerful crossover audience, and that's Philip Pullman. And the trilogy is called His Dark Materials or The Golden Compass.
Yes.
And it really it takes the motif from Milton's Paradise Lost. And Pullman's books, which won the Whitbread Prize in England, the first time a children's book had ever won that prize, have truly reached an adult audience and are published in both trade and mass market form. It's fascinating to watch.
Our telephone number again is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And remember the email challenge if you have a couple of books you'd like to suggest for our Classics Children's Lit I can't even say that. You know, some of these things I get to retake, but when we're live... Classic children's book list, then send it along at totn@npr.org. Let's talk now to Janet, who I'm sure is more articulate than I am. She's on the line with us from San Francisco.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Or good afternoon.
Depends where you are.
I am calling from San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Where it's morning, but go ahead.
Okay. I'm calling because my daughter and I, she's 4 years old, and we're reading the American Girl collections. And one of the ones that we enjoy most are the Meet Addie books. And there are a series of books about a girl growing up during the Civil War era.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually say from 7 to up, but I have to tell you, my daughter really enjoys me reading them to her at night.
Huh. And how old is she? She's 4 years old?
She's 4, yes.
Uh-huh. So these are, you can read down, in other words, on these.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's always been the case, Neil, that children could understand what they heard as opposed to what they actually read. And one of the ways that we always say to people that vocabularies are built and comprehension is extended is by reading to children books that are just a little beyond their ability to read to themselves. And the American Girl stories are utterly accessible to a child who knows how to listen.
Janet, how many of the books are there in this series?
There are 6 books in the series.
And how far along are you?
We're on the very final book.
So you're about to run out.
Yeah, and you know what? My daughter has asked me to start over, if we could start over again. So it's pretty amazing.
That is one thing, Carol Erdahl. Kids love to read books over and over again.
Oh, they certainly do. And, you know, I'm well acquainted with these books, the American Girl books, and they're wonderful books, and I'm glad they're sharing those. But one thing I do hope is I hope parents, because children want these kinds of stories, that they don't overlook the wonderful picture books that are out there. My own granddaughter, 6 years old, wants chapter books because she's not a baby anymore. And I think there are some wonderful picture books that have some real meat in them, too, that these kids could relate to.
Janet, thanks.
Yes.
Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Eden, as she was talking about, there's a certain fascination for series of books. You know, obviously Potter is the dominant one right now, but it seems if there aren't 5 or 6, you know, just one-offs are becoming less common.
Well, there are two things going on. One, people have always loved series, the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew. Go back into your own childhood or your parents' childhood. So you can say, what is it about series And the answer is the recurring character, the same reason that you want The Sopranos or 6 Feet Under or Seinfeld. You want to know what happens to the people you've come to know. And if you're a child and the world is all out there and unknown, it's very reassuring to know that your favorite character has survived and is going through more adventures and that they will resolve. The other part of what's going on is really commercial, and that is that the publishers have understood that there is an enormous amount of money to be made, not just from children's books, but from the paraphernalia that can be built onto them. The T-shirts and toys and labeled
action figures, that
exactly.
Sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And so there's now a great deal of pressure. If a book seems successful and has a charming character or a charismatic character at its center, to force the next book and the next book and the stuff that goes with it.
Carol, we mentioned picture books before as opposed to chapter books. Do you have a couple of recommendations, things that are looking good right now?
Oh, I think so. One of the new ones out is George Washington's Teeth. And this is really based on historical fact about how poor his teeth were and how he had to have them removed and how he had to have false teeth made. And it's done in a wonderful wonderful tone and with pictures that I think children who are told to brush their teeth all the time will kind of give second thought to it when they realize that George was losing his teeth.
I was going to ask, was this published by the American Dentist Association?
No, it wasn't, but it's a delightful book, and I think children will really enjoy it, and I think we'll learn something, too. At least I did. I didn't realize that he was losing his teeth about at the rate of one or two a year, and then it got worse until he had only one left when he became president.
Not true about wood, though. They were made of ivory, the figs. So.
Right. Yes. They certainly were. That's true.
Let's go now to Kenneth, and Kenneth's on the line with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi. The book I'd like to recommend is actually an out-of-print book, but if you go on the Internet, you can find it like at barnesandnoble.com, at the used book section. It's a wonderful book. It's a picture book. For kids who are just learning to read, like 5, 6, 7, who are getting into their just starting to get into their reading, it's called Mr. Yowder and the Lion Roar Capsules, and it's a quick book. It's absolutely wonderful. I read it as a kid, but it's out of print now.
Oh, so this is one that you read as a kid, as opposed to one reading to your kids.
Right, and actually when I was about 20 and I went back to my mother's house to pick up some stuff, I learned she gave it away, and I was just absolutely heartbroken. And I looked around for a couple of years. I traveled for a living, and I looked at every city I'd go to. I'd look for it in the used bookstores, but I finally found it on the Internet. And so you can actually find them on the Internet, but they're wonderful, wonderful books. They just don't make books like this anymore.
Well, Kenneth, thanks very much for the recommendation. We appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Actually, Neil, he's raised something that is interesting, the question of when books go out of print now.
And it's a question we'll have to explore when we come back from a
okay.
break, Eden. We do have an email challenge up for you today. That is to recommend classic children's books for our classic children's book list. We'll give you the results at the end of the show. We have a couple of suggestions already. Jill has written us to suggest for younger children Where the Wild Things Are, and for older children, Wrinkle in Time. We mentioned Madeline Lengle earlier. She wrote that. And All Children Oh, the Places You'll Go. I think that's a Dr. Seuss there. Kelly Motley suggests My 5-Year-Old Son Loves Two Great Books and recommends My Father's Dragon and Mrs. Piggle Wiggle. My Father's Dragon is by far one of the best children's books I've ever read. It was written by a young woman straight out of college. They are both older and written in the 1940s. Again, TOTN at NPR.org if you'd like to suggest a classic for our list. And 800-989-8255 if you'd just like to call in with a suggestion of a newer book. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing books for kids to read this summer. Our guests are Eden Ross Lipson, children's book editor of the New York Times and author of the New York Times Parents Guide for Best Books for Children, and Carol Erdahl, co-owner of the children's bookstore The Red Balloon Bookshop in St. Paul, Minnesota. What's in your book bag this summer? You're invited to join the discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. And the email address is TOTN@NPR.org. Eden, just before the break, you were talking about the issue of when children's books go out of print.
Well, it was the old line by Maurice Sendak, who said that the reason there were so few first editions of great children's books is that they all got eaten, which is in some senses true. In the last, 15 years, the tax laws changed, and it became more difficult for publishers to keep old books in print if they didn't sell a certain number of copies every year, a number so low that it would make you cry. But the internet and the search engines for secondhand and used books has blurred that distinction because there are these caches of treasured children's books. And people go to extraordinary lengths to find the books that they loved as children. And a number of small publishers are reintroducing books that have been out of print, books that the boomers in particular knew when they were young. But the woman who called just before you took the break talked about My Father's Dragon, which is one of the chapter books that I always tell people to start with when children are ready for chapter books. It was published in 1947 by Ruth Stiles Gannett. It is a wonderful series of books because the timelessness of children's books is that everybody is two, everybody's four, everybody's just ready for chapter books, everybody's just ready for certain kinds of adventures. And when they're at that moment, the books are there.
Carol Erdahl, are these books back in your store?
Oh, my. That's one of our best-selling books, My Father's Dragon. And that is just sold continually. And I think it is true. I mentioned the Edward Eger books. Those are back in print, and they were gone for a while and come back. And children take to them. I think Eden is correct that we all are that age when these things, these exciting happenings, are a great appeal for us. And it's good to know that there are publishers who will do that and who can do that.
Let's go back to the phones. Dan joins us from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
I was looking around a used bookstore here in Columbus and found the books Stuart Little and Charlotte's Web by E.B. White. And I have a 7-year-old daughter. I sent Charlotte's Web off to her. I'm working away from home at the moment. And she's on chapter 10, and she says she loves it. And the point I wanted to make, I hope she picks up, is that there was life before DreamWorks. these were written in 1945.
No. Charlotte's Web was 50 last year.
I'm sorry. Stuart Little is all the one I've got in front of me.
Right.
Stuart Little was 1945. And she thinks it's great. And what I'm trying to instill in her is there's a certain magic that happens when the book evolves as opposed to sitting down in front of a video and watching a video.
And the mantra to teach her is, the book is always better than
the
movie.
Yes. Well, Dan, I'm glad you enjoyed them.
And as for picture books, there's a gentleman from England that's put out a book called Animalia, and more recently The Waterhole, I believe it's called. And it's wonderful pictures with animals and all kinds of things that are hidden inside. And children of all ages just love finding them. Now, I live in Australia, and it's been very popular there, and I don't know if it's available here or not.
Yeah, it is. It's Graham Bass.
That's it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all children of all ages seem to really enjoy these books and finding the little secret things that are around, including adults.
Okay, Dan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Eden, we mentioned George Washington's teeth earlier. I know that you have some suggestions for biographies that kids like to read.
Well, George Washington's teeth is part of a larger phenomenon that we've seen in children's publishing, which are these picture, episodic picture biographies of important figures. And it's an entirely American publishing phenomenon. And as with George Washington's thesis, illustrated entirely in watercolors. But in the last year, we've also seen biographies of Jackson Pollock, Andy Warhol, Romain Bearden, all sorts of political figures. We're about to see, and they've come into the bookstores, but some of them aren't officially published, I think half a dozen books on the Wright brothers and or the Wright brothers and their sister. And it's really an amazing phenomenon. There's a picture book of Dwight David Eisenhower that I saw earlier this spring, Will Rogers, on and on and on, public figures both from the arts and politics and history. We recently had a cluster of Joan of Arc biographies. The point is that they're lavishly illustrated and they're intended for children in the middle grades, or second, third, fourth grades. And they come, they're so visually sophisticated that they're hooked with the illustrations and the pictures, and then the story, and then because they're old enough to begin to know how to do research or to ask for help if they want to know more, these books all have bibliographies, notes about how to find out where to go, and in some cases, projects to do.
It's interesting. Carol, you're talking about, Eden was just talking about illustration. A few years ago, I mean, the great craze, particularly for younger children, was pop-up books and all kinds of, construction elements that would come up with the paper itself. Are those still popular?
Yes, they are. I think with a lot of collectors, actually. With children, they are, but they have been getting them... what do I want to say, more sturdy.
Huh.
I think many parents have been reluctant to get pop-up books as we had them years ago, and now they're made with sturdier paper or more like almost a board, and that makes them more accessible for little children. However, some of them are still very intricate, and most parents look at the intricacy and they say that's not where my child's at right now, but we find a lot of older children and adults who collect. They become collector's items, many of these books. Sabuda has done many that are engineering feats, actually.
If you go onto the internet and look at the pop-up books and the collectible sites, it's a very brisk business.
Yes.
Let's get another caller in, and it's going to be Dinah. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
It's Danae.
Danae, okay. You're with us from Salt Lake City. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to recommend, along the fantasy line, and I'm not sure if I'm going to say this right, Lloyd Alexander in the early 70s wrote a series...
The Prydian.
Prydian?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I told your... screener that I named my second son Taryn after the main character, although apparently he has a pronunciation guide in a new edition, and he said it was Taron, but I just think he got it wrong. So I just, there's a lot of similarities between those and the Tolkien books, and I think they played on the same mythology. The characters are very different. And what I enjoyed is the growth that the character went through from the first book, where he's it's all about swordplay and wars and valor, and by the end of the book, when he's completed everything, just the growth and how he abhors war, and they're just wonderful. And
you're right.
And also, if I could put in, a man mentioned the ground based book.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a whole night up. I didn't sleep at all trying to figure out the puzzles in the 11th hour, 13th hour, something like that. It's a lot of fun, and I don't know that it's for kids, but it's a big picture book with just puzzle after puzzle.
Well, thanks very much.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's interesting she named her son after a character. This was, I guess, the origin of the popularity of the girl's name, Wendy, going back to Peter Pan. Yeah. Here's a suggestion from Judy Ganley in Oakland, California. I've got to give a shout-out for Summerland by Michael Chabon. My husband and I are taking turns reading this book to our 8-year-old son each evening. It's a beautifully written book that works on so many different levels. We also recommend the series of books by Dan Gutman about a boy who can travel back in time using a baseball card to meet long-lost heroes of baseball. Shoeless Joe Jackson, Babe Ruth, Jackie Robinson, and Honus Wagner. Great for sporty boys who think they don't like to read. All right, let's get another recommendation from a listener. Chelsea joins us on the line from Lake Orion in Michigan.
Hello.
Hi.
There's a couple books I wanted to suggest. Well, I know you guys talked about Harry Potter already.
Yeah.
But I really, really like those books. And like you said, they're not just for kids, they're for parents.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple picture books. There's one that's about, like, hunting and stuff, and it's by Buck Wilder. It's, like, hunting and fishing. And my brother, he's 16, and he still likes to read it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, like, picture-y, but it's, like, got a bunch of words and descriptions. And it's real fun for boys, also, like, who don't think they like to read. And there's also Captain Underpants series, and they're by Dave Telke, I think. And they're, like, about these boys who write comic strips, and their comic strip came true by a wish or something. And they're real fun for a bunch of other people, like kids to, like, my age. I'm 14, and I like to read those books. And I was thinking poetry, like poetry books. We've been learning about that in school, and, like, lots of poetry is real fun to read when, like, the poetry books and stuff.
Hmm. Which ones do you like in particular?
Well, Shel Silverstein, he does more like kid poetry.
Yeah.
But those are still fun to read. And there's some by, it's Miles of Smiles by Stephen Carpenter. And just the fun ones to read at night and stuff. But I haven't gotten to the, like, real adult poetry. But I think that that's also fun books to mention because you can also write your own poetry. You don't have to be that good or anything.
we expect a little bit more from the people who write the books, though.
Yeah, I know.
I guess it goes back to Dr. Seuss, of course, all of his stuff. Well, doggerel, really, not quite poetry.
And I know how you're saying lots of people like the series and stuff, but I also like the books that aren't series because you can almost make up They give you an ending, but you can continue the story on, like, and stuff. And I like, another book I really like is Go Ask Alice. It's anonymous, but it's a diary about a young girl who, like, did drugs and got caught up in just the wrong stuff. And, I didn't like reading now, and I just pretty much had to find the right book. And now I really like reading.
Well, keep up with it, Chelsea.
Thanks.
We're going to read some more of your emails suggesting kids lit classics. Hello all, writes Roberto Rivera in Indianapolis. For me, Hans Christian Andersen takes the money all the time. I remember my first book was a collection of his fairy tales when I was about 5 or 6. To this date, his stories hold a very important position in my life as they got me started in a life of reading. Angela writes to suggest, don't forget Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn, Old Yeller, and Where the Red Fern Grows. Well, the first three of those I knew, the last one I didn't, but thanks, Angela. And from Aaron Boyce in Rochester, New York, it's exciting to see so many children engulfed in the wonderful world of fantasy literature. For those who have enjoyed The Adventures of Harry Potter, I'd like to recommend as a next step the fantasy books that marked my elementary school years, The Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis, from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe through The Magician's Nephew and The Last Battle. These are classics in the world of fantasy. We're going to have the top five kids lit classics at the end of this hour, and a larger and more complete list will be posted later on our website. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. As most of you know, another great source for kids and books is the public library. Deborah Taylor is a librarian and the coordinator of school and student services at the Enoch Pratt Free Library in Baltimore, Maryland. She's with us from her office in Baltimore, and thanks for joining us.
Glad to do it.
So what are the new children's books that everybody wants to borrow this year?
Well, of course, everyone is in the public libraries. Everyone is waiting for the fifth installment of the Harry Potter series.
Uh-huh.
But also people are reading lots of the classics. They're reading for their summer reading lists.
They still have summer reading lists?
Oh, yes. There's still summer reading lists. There's still parents and kids coming in trying to find the books that are on the list.
It's not still Silas Marner, is it?
No, but, you know, occasionally we do get requests for the Pearl.
Okay.
So it still goes on. So we, most of the time the library is gearing up in the summer to encourage kids to read through summer reading programs and other kinds of activities.
Okay. Let's get another listener involved. Deb joins us on the line from San Carlos, California.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. I have only one book to recommend. It's called The Breadwinner by Deborah Ellis, and this is a book for older girls, 10, 11, 12, even 13. And it's about a sixth grade girl under the Taliban rule in Afghanistan. And my daughter found it absolutely thrilling.
Hmm. I heard intakes of breath there from our guests.
Yes, there's actually a sequel to The Breadwinner called Parvana's Journey. And highly recommend that.
Well, thank you. This will make my daughter very happy.
Okay.
It's made the circles in the sixth grade, but my daughter was outraged to know that girls are treated like that, and so now she's on the lookout in the newspapers for accounts of such treatment.
I'd be careful of that. You never know what happens when people start reading newspapers.
Exactly. Thank you.
Deb, thanks very much for the recommendation.
Bye-bye.
And let's go now to Claire, and Claire is with us from Medway, Massachusetts. Hello, Claire, are you there?
Uh-huh.
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, yes!
It's nice to have people who are excited to be on the program, Claire. Do you have a recommendation of a book?
Uh-huh.
What is it?
The Series of Unfortunate Events books by Lemony Snicket.
Lemony Snicket. And which one are you reading now?
Well, right now...
Yep.
We haven't gotten to the first chapter yet because we're starting a new book, but the one we're reading now is The Miserable Mill.
That's good. And you're enjoying it? Do you like it?
Uh-huh.
Okay, Claire. How old are you?
Six.
Thanks very much. Appreciate your calling to join us. Eden Lipson, before we let you go, Lemony Snicket, that's a big deal too, isn't it?
8 million of those, yes. They multiply when you're not looking.
I see. Well, thank you very much for being with us today. Eden Lipson is children's book editor of the New York Times and the author of the New York Times Parents' Guide to the Best Books for Children. She joined us from our bureau in New York, where I think it's a sunny day, finally. And Carol Erdahl, we appreciate your time as well.
Carol, it's been fun to be with you.
Thank you so much. Carol Erdahl is co-owner of the Red Balloon Bookshop, a children's bookstore in St. Paul, Minnesota. She joined us from member station KNOW in St. Paul, Minnesota. And Deborah Taylor is going to stay with us a bit longer. When we come back from a break, we're going to talk about book clubs for kids, how to form them and what to do with them and how to get kids interested in reading. Here's some more suggestions for our Kids Lit Classics. My husband and I love A Series of Unfortunate Events by Lemony Snicket. We're in our 20s. We don't have children, but already we bought all of the books for when we do. They are simply wonderful and clever. I find it hard to believe that they're children's books. I'm curious as to how well they are received by children. Perhaps your guest could comment. Well, I think Claire from Medway, Massachusetts, had your answer for you. Sarah Miller from Portland, Oregon, thanks very much. We'll be back after a break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.